There have been a lot of books this year that take us inside the White House decision-making process. There was The Price of Loyalty about Paul O'Neill, President Bush's former Treasury Secretary. There was Against All Enemies by Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism czar. Now there's a book that could put Bob Woodward to shame in terms of its investigative reporting. It's called All the President's Pets, the story of one reporter who refused to roll over. Mo Rocca, formerly a correspondent for The Daily Show, spent time investigating present and past presidents' relationship with their pets to uncover the real story about how presidential policy is made. Did you always wonder about how much influence Sox had over the Clinton administration? And what about Barney Cam? Is it really just a tour of the Bush White House? What did you always want to know about the president's pets? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Author Mo Rocca joins us now from our New York bureau. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Joan. I have to commend you for having the courage to have me on this show. I know the pressure the White House brought to bear to cancel this. I'm as disturbed as the rest of America is by the lack of transparency in the White House. And to be fair, it's not just the Bush administration. This is a problem we've seen since the birth of the modern White House and Teddy Roosevelt. The insulation of a president to help preserve the image of an omniscient, superheroic, almost godlike chief executive. So I wanted to go behind the scenes and see what it is they're hiding. What is it that would undermine this image of infallibility? And I found that there were stunning parallels between presidential pet behavior and major decisions in the White House, that pets were in fact making big decisions, good and bad. And I looked at pets from George Washington's donkey Royal Gift to Woodrow Wilson's nicotine-addicted ram Old Ike, Martin Van Buren's tiger cubs from the Sultan of Oman, and of course Clinton's pets and now Barney. And my Rosetta Stone, if you will, was the Cuban Missile Crisis and Kennedy's dogs. In October 1962, of course, we came closer than we ever have to nuclear annihilation or confrontation. At the time, Kennedy had a Welsh Terrier named Charlie. All of my pets are real. Charlie was a Welsh Terrier that, much like the president, was a smart, energetic, horny as all get-out dog. I mean, he was a nut. And at the time, Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet leader, gave the Kennedys the gift of a gorgeous, very sexy, white half-husky named Pushinka. I think Julie Christie and Dr. Zhivago. Mm-hmm. And Pushinka was the daughter of Strelka, the first Soviet space dog to come back alive. Well, JFK was displeased with Mrs. Kennedy accepting the gift because he felt that it gave Khrushchev a chance to look good in the public eye. But Charlie and Pushinka fell in love. Well, at least they made it. And Pushinka had four little puppies at JFK called Pupniks. Now, this happened, which I think is a cute name, by the way. This happened at the exact time that JFK rejected the recommendation for a nuclear first strike on Cuba advocated by Curtis LeMay, who would later be lampooned in Dr. Strangelove, and instead embraced the more peaceful blockade, which, of course, was the right solution. And this is what Robert McNamara is talking about when he talks about Kennedy learning to empathize. He saw those Pupniks. He saw that Soviets and Americans did want the same thing. And this is what led me down this path.
Well, what kind of documentation do you have to do this kind of research? I mean, for example, and in the current White House, I'm wondering, how do you gain the confidence of the president's dog, Barney?
Well, I don't want to tell all that I know about Barney. As cynics will say, well, you know, the presidential pet is a reason behind our illogical policy in Iraq. I would go a step further and say that if the president relied more on Barney, it might make more sense. But again, to be fair, this is something we see throughout history. And I have books, I have microfiche, and I have my head. And the thing is that all these pets, again, are documented. Their behavior is documented. There are seven books published on presidential pets. I own five. The truth is you can get by with about three. After that, they just kind of get repetitive. I mean, you know, who cares about Teddy Roosevelt's pony getting stuck in an elevator? Okay, it's a cute story. So what? I wanted to go a step further than the normal canon, than the existing canon, that is, of presidential pet lore, and look at unheralded presidents and their pets, like Martin Van Buren, whom I mentioned. Martin Van Buren was a very dandyish, flamboyant second president, who was given by Kabul al-Sayed, the Sultan of Oman, a gift of 2 tiger cubs. Well, Martin Van Buren really was sort of an aspiring Siegfried and Roy, or at least an aspiring Siegfried, I suppose. And he was so enchanted with these tiger cubs, and this is 150 years before the Mirage Hotel even existed. And this is the reason that the Panic of 1837, the first economic crisis in America, took place, because our president was so engrossed with his Vegas show animals that he wasn't paying attention to what was going on in the economy. And he sort of explained it as a Jeffersonian restraint, but I would just call it negligence. And that's an example of a good presidential pet gone bad, and we do have those.
Do you know, it's been bothering me for a while, but do you know if any of the presidents had a pet mollusk?
There are, let me think if there are any mollusks. I mean, there are certain...
Even if it's just a bivalve, I would be interested, you know, even if it was not a mollusk per se.
Well, we might have some cephalopods. There could be some cephalopods. There are, as far as creatures that need water, John Quincy Adams kept an alligator in the East Room. That was a gift of the Marquis de Lafayette, who gave several of our president's gifts. And John Quincy Adams and his alligator were both fairly unlikable, hence the ascendancy of Andrew Jackson, the first common man president, who quite appropriately had a cursing parrot named Paul, who, and this is absolutely true, you can Google it, and Google never lies. The parrot cursed all through Old Hickory's funeral, and people busted up laughing. There is, by the way, a history of vile-tempered birds in the White House. Ulysses S. Grant's gamecocks were very ornery.
I don't want to leave the alligator for a minute here. I'm just curious whether there's any indication whether this alligator had any influence in the early Supreme Court. Because, you know, it's the new session of the Supreme Court, and it just strikes me that maybe an alligator is what's needed to tame the court.
I have to tell you, I don't do Congress or the Supreme Court. Those are different books. I'm all about the executive branch, and my concern that executive power is too strong in this country and the press corps is not aggressive enough about making it more transparent. I think it's a real problem. It's beyond anything the framers of the Constitution in Article 2 intended. I think it's that. You know, before FDR, I should point out, presidents didn't send budgets to Congress. It was the other way around. And the White House staff has increased from under 16 people during FDR's administration to over 1,500 now. And so these are all there are parallels here to increasing power, increasing secrecy, and the need to expose it. And that's why All the President's Pets, my book, which was published yesterday and is available in bookstores and online, and through my website, allthepresidentspets.com, is written as a thriller, because this is high-stakes material, and it's a thriller starring me and Helen Thomas. Yes, she's my heroine, because she's a tireless, indefatigable pursuer of the truth. She's the dean of the White House Press Corps. She's a tough lady who's willing to look like to be alienated and seen as kind of a little bit nutty simply because she asks the same relevant questions over and over again. And as you know, Joe, she lives underneath the White House in a subterranean lair where she keeps the presidential pet archives. And she and I, in this plot, which is really a cross between All the President's Men, Charlotte's Web, with some Da Vinci Code thrown in, because what's a thriller without a villainous albino and some anagram? She and I pursue the truth, and much at our own risk.
I'm speechless, but that's such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I think we, in some semblance of admission that I'm an employee of the news division at National Public Radio, I think I have to tell our listeners that we're having a bit of fun here, and there's a lot of factual information in your book. But the things we're talking about, some at least that we're talking about, are the fits of imagination of Mo Rocca.
Well,
and I need to remind people,
hold on,
they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. What do you say to that?
Well, you may dispute my finding that CNN's Wolf Blitzer is actually a Japanese man, but it's in my book and the proof is there. I think the important thing, because we're really talking about journalism in general here, I think the important thing to remember, and this comes up when I talk about Chester Alan Arthur's giraffe, which is the only pet in my book that is not documented, but Chester Alan Arthur burned all of his papers. The 21st president burned all of his papers when he left office. So I cannot prove to you he had a giraffe, but you cannot prove to me that he didn't have a giraffe. And that's as strict a journalistic standard as I'm willing to adhere to.
Okay. Then in that case, there's only one thing to do, and that's go to your calls. So let's go to
Tom
in
calls.
Newport News,
calls,
Virginia.
Calls.
Tom, you've got Mo Rocca at your disposal. Have your way
question.
With him. Tom, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Welcome.
Oh, what I want to know basically is about presidential dogs, current.
Yes.
You know, not current and recent. And my question is, where do the dogs sleep?
Are they in the presidential
bedroom? Are they on the bed? Are they beside the bed? Or is some designated keeper?
There have been – Trafee's Bryant was a presidential dog keeper who served in several administrations through the Kennedy administration and wrote a book called Dog Days at the White House and talked about that. The Reagans gave their dog, Lucky, who was a Bouvier de Flanders, which is like a sheepdog, gave him a gorgeous doghouse that was actually built by Theo Hayes, who was the great – granddaughter-in-law of Rutherford B. Hayes, who in fact had a Siamese cat. The very first Siamese cat in America was a gift from David Sickles, the consul to Siam, and I love calling Thailand Siam because I'm a huge King and I fan, but sent this Siamese cat to Rutherford B. Hayes, and her name was Miss Pussy, and I have a whole chapter devoted to Miss Pussy and her role in vetoing the Chinese Exclusion Act. Rutherford B. Hayes did that, and the Chinese Exclusion Act would have been the first racially based limit on immigration in this country. Unfortunately, it was later passed. Well, I'll tell you, Tom, you may hate cats, but Americans are smitten with kittens, according to Parade magazine. There are more cats than dogs in this country. However, you are correct that dogs are a much more, even if you didn't say this, I'll say you're correct, that dogs are a much more important animal to have.
Can Harry you get to my question?
Wait, what was it again?
Tom, you have a career in interviewing. Tom wanted to know where the dogs sleep.
Well, okay, look, I gave you an interesting factoid about the Hayes doghouse. I think that's worth something. I don't
know
where
Morocco,
they sleep.
That you're avoiding the question. That's
okay,
what I think.
I think they sleep on grass. Liberty, the golden retriever that Jerry Ford had, once was locked outside, and Jerry Ford walked out in the middle of the night and then ended up locking himself out and had to rap on the window. That's one of these things you'll find in sort of the more typical, the primary texts about presidential pets. I think they sleep in rooms. They sleep on grass, and they sleep in doghouses.
Okay. Let's try one other call, since you like calls. Bruce in
Bloomingville,
Ohio. Did I get that right?
Ohio, mother of all presidents, but it actually doesn't have more presidents than any other state.
Go.
Virginia does.
Mr. Rock, I was always wondering, you know, do you remember the rabbit that Jimmy Carter attacked?
It was not a rabbit. It was a nutria. A nutria is a rodent from South America. It's between 14 inches and 2 feet long. It has webbed hind feet, and it has extremely sharp incisors that can cut through anything. It was brought in by farmers and in the South, and it screwed up the ecosystem. Brooks Jackson, who was formerly with the AP at that time, in 1979, broke that story that Jimmy Carter was mired in the hostage crisis, and this was a case of a photo op or a snapshot corroborating a very bad image. And he was in the midst of the hostage crisis, went fishing in a lake in Plains, Georgia, and this animal came speeding towards him, what was dubbed the killer rabbit, and he flailed at it helplessly with his oar. And this was the image. It was sort of like the Howard Dean scream, that image that corroborates the worst part of your reputation. But research has shown, and I show in my book, that it's actually a nutria. And I also reveal that this was a pet who had been a nice pet in the Carter White House. But then when the student uprising and the Islamic Revolution happened, this nutria became an Islamic fundamentalist himself and was banished from the White House and stalked President Carter and tried to attack him in that lake in Plains, Georgia.
One more call. Derek in Minneapolis. You got 10 seconds. Derek?
Derek,
hello,
come on.
10 seconds. 10 seconds to ask your question.
I was wondering if any presidents kept sea monkeys, and if so, what important political decisions did they make?
Very good. That was 10 seconds. Thank you, Derek.
There
you have 30 seconds for your response.
There are very few simians that have been kept in the White House, although there were bears from Lieutenant Zebulon Pike that were brought to Thomas Jefferson, and Teddy Roosevelt, who had our most pets ever, 36, also had a bear named Jonathan Edwards. So I know bears aren't simians, but it's still a pretty neat factoid.
It's coming on.
Oh, okay. Well, I would love everyone to buy this book. And if you do, you can call me on the phone and I'll read passages to you. So it's like having an audiobook.
Morocco, thank you. I'm exhausted. Thanks very much. Morocco is a former correspondent for The Daily Show and contributor to NBC's Today Show. He's also a frequent guest on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. His new book, which you've heard several times, is called All the President's Pets, the story of one reporter who refused to roll over. He joined us from our New York bureau. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.